from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're about to get started, and I'm very pleased tonight to have Mark Klass and Robin Sachs with me. You'll know Robin Sachs as an ADA out of Los Angeles County and the author of the new book, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe. Mark Klass founded the Klass Kids Foundation with the singular mission of stopping crimes against children. I don't think you can get a better one than that. Of course, Mark is a crime victim. His daughter Polly was taken too soon from this earth, and I thought I'd bring them both on tonight to talk about Robin's book and about what we can do to keep kids safe. Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good evening.
Mark, I'm going to start with you, and it's a big kick having you on the program tonight. And I've had lots of crime victims on the program, Beth Holloway, Drew Kessie, you name it, Mark Lunsford. We've talked to them all. And one thing that always amazes me, and you can put yourself into this category too, is the strength of those that are victims, families of victims, and how they turn it around their own tragedies to help others. I'm not trying to blow smoke. I'm just saying what's a fact. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, sure, I'd be happy to. What we try to do, I think, is make up for what we couldn't do. I mean, we all tell our children that we will be there for them when they need us. And in the instances of all the individuals you mentioned, and myself certainly, we just were unable to be there. So as a result of that, as we search for our children, if that's in fact what happened in so many of these cases, then we try to make up for that, really. We try to be there for them in their hour of greatest need. We learn how to be stronger than we were. We learn how to fight harder than we've ever fought before. We learn how to focus in on things that are truly important in our life and that are not superficial. And that ultimately can turn into almost a cause. And what we find, and certainly what I found, is that I can really give meaning, only I can give meaning to my daughter's tragedy. She gave meaning to her life, but I have to give meaning to her death. And I do that by trying to ensure that what happened to her doesn't happen to other kids and creating a legacy in her name that will be protective of other kids. The alternative to that oftentimes is destroying yourself in depression or in alcoholism or in drug abuse. And certainly that's not what they wanted, and certainly that's not what we as parents want to see happen to ourselves. So it really becomes a therapeutic way of creating their legacy and protecting other kids.
You know, Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, a regular feature on this program, nothing but the Sachs, we call it. When we talk about cases like Mark's, Mark Lunsford, Drew Kessie, who will be here a little bit later on to talk about his daughter, we talk about doesn't necessarily mean anything when it comes to age. It's small children. It could be an older daughter. It could be anyone. But something that came out here in the last few years I think is fantastic, and we need to utilize it more, and it certainly has helped, Robin, is something called Amber Alert. Mark Klass's organization helped get it going, and you know, with the work that you've done with Amber Alert and others, in particular the stick, what can parents do to make sure that their kids are protected more?
Well, I think there's many products that are out there, and there's a lot of things that could be, utilized. I'm personally a big fan, if we can, into preventative measures and good old-fashioned parenting as our first line of defense, and any of those products just being out there and used as opportunities and tools to remind us that we need to have the conversations about safety. So if you're thinking about buying a product, hopefully that will prompt the conversation, the more important conversation about what to do in terms of safety and keeping your bodies and your lessons safe in terms of what you do in both in the home, in the school, outside of the home, with strangers, non-strangers. And of course, you know, really just keeping that as a priority in terms of how we live our lives.
You know, Mark Klass is here from the Klass Kids Foundation. You wrote the foreword, Robin's new book, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe. Education, education, education is such a big thing. You know, I see you on television. We do what we can here on my program. But it seems like with some folks, until they actually are affected by it, they may not look at it the way they should. What better job can we do in the media, law enforcement, whoever, to educate the folks about keeping kids safe?
Well, I think that the media and law enforcement and legislators do what they can, but you know what, you can't depend on commentators or legislators to legislate out crime. I mean, we're always going to have these issues, and I think what parents have to do is two things. Number one, they have to understand that this doesn't have to be a fear-based issue, that these are things that can be discussed in a positive, non-threatening way. And certainly one of the best ways to do that, and I'll talk about this a little bit more in just a moment, is to get a hold of Robin's book. But they also have to understand that youth is a time of learning. And that just as kids go to school to learn their academics and go on to the athletic field to learn how to play sports and to learn teamwork, they also have a desire to know the steps they can take to avoid victimization in the first place. And I'm not necessarily talking about stranger danger. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's important that people should take a look at Robin's book, because it really does create a blueprint for the various conversations parents could and should have with their children on a regular basis, so that kids will make informed, educated choices and avoid victimization in the first place.
Robin, not all child molesters and predators look alike. You know, John Cooey, you couldn't have found a more creepy-looking SOB, for lack of a better term. But a predator and a child molester could be wearing a $5,000 suit, have a fancy haircut, and be driving a Mercedes. And that's something that we need to get across. And in your book, I'm sure you cover things like that. What can you tell the folks about, what do you look for when you look for a predator or a child molester? There is no certain look, is there?
No, absolutely not. And I think that's probably the part that gives parents the biggest heartache and makes it the most difficult, and frankly makes it the issue that people want to kind of keep their head in the sand in. Because it's very easy if you say, okay, you know, tell me what to look like. If you know what a shark looks like in the ocean, you know what a snake looks like in the desert, but what does a predator look like out there on the street? And the predator can look like anybody. The predator can be anybody. The predator can be dressed fancy. They can be dressed not fancy. They could have a criminal record. They could have no criminal record. They could live in a great home. They could have great parents. They could have a great job. And that's the part that's so frightening, which is why parents try to avoid this issue, because of the fact that there are predators that we all know. There's predators that live amongst us. But what I really advocate for with parents is we have an absolute duty to protect our children. And as Mark said, we promise our children that. That's what we say, and we do the best job that we can. And we are not doing our job when we give some person that makes us feel uncomfortable the benefit of the doubt and ignore the priority of our children. I see it time and time again where we're so caught up in being politically correct and kind to complete strangers that we don't simply say, you know what, this person makes me feel uncomfortable, and I am going to walk away from this person. And even if that person is, you know, black, white, green, or whatever, it's not a race issue, it's not a religion issue, it's not a job issue, it's the feeling of someone that gives you the creeps. And anybody who feels that they encounter someone that gives them the creeps has the absolute obligation to listen to that instinct and get away from that person, period, without conducting any sort of investigation.
You know, Mark, we can lock our kids up until they're 21 and say, you can't go out, you can't do this, you can't do that. That's not going to work. I remember Dave Holloway telling me very, very clearly on the program one night that he didn't want Natalie to go to Aruba. He just felt something funny about it. But there's a lot more to it. And we've talked about educating, you know, the legislators, the police officers, the whoever. But how do we teach our kids to be safe?
Well, and that's exactly right. And you know, it's a difficult issue, as Robin suggests. What people prefer to do is to say, as they have for years, well, don't talk to strangers. Well, we know that strangers aren't the problem. As Robin said, the predators live amongst us. We
yep.
know the predators. There are 650,000 registered sex offenders in the United States alone, and those are only the ones that have been caught and convicted. What we do know is that statistically, the vast majority of children that are going to be victimized are going to be victimized by somebody they know. That's why they need as much good information as they can have, why they need to be taught to trust their instinct and to put distance between themselves and whatever it is that's making them feel bad. But to suggest for a second that, you know, that it's strangers and that we can protect them by locking them up is naive. And it's uneducated and it's an uninformed position.
Yeah, certainly not today's society. Mark Klass and Robin Sachs are here, and we're talking about how to keep your kids safe. And Robin's new book, Predators and Child Molesters, is available to purchase, and there's a link on how to do that in the show notes. Robin, let's get into some of the high-profile cases that we're seeing in the news now. Of course, we'd be remiss without talking about the Anthony case a little bit. You and I do this every week. What we've seen last week now is more a deposition video. Again, I'll be very public about saying that if I see another picture of Casey Anthony peeing on the parking lot on television, I'm going to be physically ill, because that does nothing. It takes away from the tragedy of this case that a young girl, a little baby, lost her life. Now there's two grandparents that are doing whatever they can do to try and protect their daughter, and we'll get into that a little bit. But what's gone wrong with this case? What's gone right with this case? Or are we seeing too much of it?
Well, you know, I do feel like it has been the topic of some news shows a little bit more than I would like to see, not because I don't feel that the case is an extremely important case for a lot of reasons. One, probably the most important reason, is to enlighten people and show people that attractive young women can be sick murderers and baby killers and be, you know, horrific people, and it's important as an example of what actually exists to make people aware that these crimes can occur even by mothers. What bothers me about the coverage of it is that there are so many cases in every city in this country and even abroad, but more importantly for me, in this country, that happen every day that don't get any attention and that don't get the media help that they need to put the adequate pressure on the powers that may be, that may be able to actually get people arrested and get people behind bars and get the sick jerks out there, you know, the punishment that they deserve. So that's the problem that I have with it. And you know that I've made no secret about it. I think it's a very strong case from the prosecution yeah. point of view. Part of it, what I don't like is I don't like the media showing this case because it almost elevates the standard of proof that we have. The amount of evidence in this case is unbelievable. I mean, there is not, you don't really get a case where you have a motive, you have lies, you have inconsistent statements, you have found the remains, you have DNA, you have a, you know, sticker on the mouth to show intent, you have journal entries, you have you know, an alibi of an appointing to a person that doesn't exist. And that is just, the reality is that if you don't have beyond a reasonable doubt in that, we convict on far less because You don't need to have 100% certainty, and I'm worried that this case makes people say, oh, well, in that case, they had all these different 10 pieces of evidence. That's what we need for someone to be convicted, and that's what I don't want to happen.
Mark Klass, we started out the interview by talking about victims, victimization, and my respect for family members and how strong they are and how they go to help people, and I may get criticized for this next comment a little bit, but I see that somewhat in George and Cindy Anthony. I've spoken to them both on air and off the air on my program. It's been some time, but now I see them in a different light somewhat. I feel for their tragedy, but I also see that they are desperate. They are doing what they can to try and protect their daughter, but I'm wondering what it will really do for the case. And they just seem to be spiraling out of control. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think what they've done is they've made a very clear choice that they are going to stand for Casey and do whatever they can to convince people that she's innocent at the expense of justice for little Casey. And I think that that is a strategy that has backfired and will continue to backfire in horrible and personal ways until this case is resolved one way or another. I think the best thing that the Anthony family could do at this point is lock the windows, lock the doors, and order in pizza until after the trial is concluded.
I couldn't agree more. Robin Sachs, as a DA, would you love it to see these potential witnesses on television all the time? It's like they're testifying in front of millions.
It is like they're testifying in front of millions. It's not the way that I would. From the prosecution point of view, it's fantastic. You get the information, you get the inconsistencies. Anybody who's has any brain cells or turned on the television in the last year will definitely have an idea of what this case is about. And certainly, if you don't have the evidence from police investigations, and I actually just recently spoke with Bill Hodgman, who was the prosecutor in the OJ case, and one of the key issues he told me about, which was the police log in the OJ case, and I'm sorry to digress here, did not exactly match the time ticker on the TV cameras that went along with when the media was there, when they were processing the crime scene and the double murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. And it was unbelievable that role that the media played, which allowed for reasonable doubt, maybe the same kind of mechanism that actually allows for conviction here. And that is, I would not be surprised if we see in this case a impeachment testimony being used based on the interviews that we have seen on The Morning Show or any of the other television shows that the Anthony family have done as a basis of cross-examination, which that's talk about bringing media to a new level. That may actually occur in this case.
Mark Klass from Klass Kids Foundation. Has the media gone away from focusing on the missing rather than sensationalizing the case the way they seem to be doing now?
Well, there was very little attention paid to this issue prior to my daughter's being kidnapped.
Exactly.
And I think some of the things that made her case so high profile were, number one, is always in these cases now, we see that the victim is generally a very pretty little white girl.
Yeah.
It was also the advent of cable news and the internet, and both of those medias were utilized to promote Polly's situation. So as a result of what happened in 1993, and that's not to discredit the kids before because they just didn't get a lot of attention, but we've done a lot of things. We have created law enforcement protocols to help in the recovery of missing children. We have legislated things like truth in sentencing to put the bad guys behind bars for long periods of time. Megan's Law, which gives us the ability to access information on the registered offenders in our communities. Three strikes and you're out in California, which is a marvelous piece of legislation that has felony enhancements. We have things like the Amber Alert. People are much more educated than they were before. But one of the problems with the Anthony case is that it really takes a small case, a very small local case in Orlando, Florida, and blows it up into the public in the public venue to a point where it seems like it might be the only news out there,
yeah.
as our country seems to be falling apart around us, and it distracts people's attention and really sets up a set of false priorities. Whether or not or when Casey Anthony goes to prison or goes to death row is really insignificant in the big picture of things. And I, for one, would like to see more of a focus on so many of the other cases that occur on a regular basis and less attention paid to this case. Robin knows what some of these cases are. We have a couple of high-profile ones in California right now. They're all over the country, and for whatever reason, they just don't get any attention, and there are desperate families out there on a regular basis begging for just a little bit of the attention that is heaped upon the Anthony family.
Absolutely, and we try to cover as many of those cases as we can here on my program. But, Mark, I want to stay with you a little bit and talk about the lady that we have on the line with us, Robin Sachs, who I've known for some time now. She won't like this analogy of mine, but I consider when it comes to a cause, and this cause of protecting children through her job, through the work that she does in the media, through her book or whatever, like a dog with a bone. Once she has that, she's going to hold on to that thing until she gets it done, and she gets it done right. And now that's with all my love and affection, Robin. Mark Klass, tell me what you think about Robin Sachs.
Not much, no. Robin really,
that's all right.
I had sort of this TV relationship with Robin. I would be in a studio someplace, she'd be in a studio someplace, and we'd comment on a case, and then that would be repeated some weeks later or some months later, and that went on for quite some period of time. Robin's well known in the victims' community. She's known as a dogged DA who, as you said, like a dog with a bone, will not let go until she is done with the case. When she called me finally and asked me to write the foreword to her book, I was dumbfounded and I was humbled and I was honored, and I've since had an opportunity to get to know Robin quite a bit better. In fact, my wife and I just spent the weekend down in Los Angeles with Robin and her family, and she's a fantastic person with a fantastic family, and I think we'll have a long professional and personal relationship that hopefully will move our causes forward and will continue to be protective of other people.
I predict big things for ADA Robin Sachs, and big things for Robin Sachs means helping people, and I want to thank you both for coming on. You notice I'm not going to give you a chance to respond, Robin.
I like blushing. I'm going to kick your butt. I love you anyway.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Let's do it again real soon.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Bye, Mark, and thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Robin Sachs and Mark Klass. And if you can find two better people that want to help with the cause out there, and the cause is protecting children, you let me know, and I'll bring them on the air too, but it'll take a lot to keep up to them. This is Dana Pretzer. My name is synonymous to the program. We call this Scared Monkeys Radio, and we're going to come back with a criminal profiler, Pat Brown, and we're going to talk about this creepy Craigslist killer. You know, it's always something going on out there. You think it's only in the movies? No way, baby. It's real life. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. Pat Brown is here. You know, Pat is a criminal profiler, regular on the Nancy Grace Show, and someone who we bring on, one of the more popular guests on the program here, to talk about high-profile cases, and a lot of times kind of the creepy cases, cases that you think that you'd never see, except maybe in a movie. But we've got this Craigslist killer thing going on right now, and no perfect person to bring on than Pat Brown to talk about it. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Dana.
Creepy
as hell, huh?
Well, I don't know, but aren't they, you know, when you see this case, this is a perfect story for, I know all our author friends out there, you know them and I know them, are going to be just licking their chops to write this story because it's unbelievable. What are your thoughts on the Craigslist killer?
Well, I think what you're talking about is a simple fact that he's not the expected killer. Of course, every Hollywood movie does want to have the lawyer or the doctor or the somebody who is a professional turn out to be the creepy dude, the one you don't suspect. So yes, in that sense, one could say that's, you know, kind of an interesting case in that way. And of course, we don't see this as often as we see people who are a little bit more down on their luck. Most serial killers are people who are having trouble keeping jobs, and they don't usually get very far with education. Maybe they just graduate high school, maybe try to join the military and fail, or they do maybe a year of community college, and that's it. So they usually aren't working jobs that are that highly skilled. So this is unusual in that sense.
When you profile someone like this and you tie in the information superhighway, if you want to call it that, the internet, Craigslist, whatever you want to call it, how easy is it for guys like this to pick their prey? It's really easy, like shooting fish in a barrel, we say up here in Saskatchewan.
I think that every type of person is going to be a serial predator. It's found a fairly easy way, a fish in the barrel, like you say, and the internet is just one method. I mean, there's other methods. There's, you know, going down to the bike path and just waiting for that jogger who keeps saying, you know, it's my right to go jogging even if it's death. Well, it is your right, and I wish we could all do it, but you're now going to be dead. So all he has to do is stand on the trail, and maybe he won't get somebody every day, but he'll get somebody eventually. And the same thing is true for men who go troll on the strip for prostitutes, or guys who pick up girls in bars, pick up hitchhikers. I mean, there's a lot of fish, a lot of barrels you can get your fish in, let's put it that way.
The profile of this particular individual, like you say, it's perfect for the media. This is something that they're going to jump all over. What's the coverage been like, in your opinion?
Yeah, it really has gotten huge, huge coverage. I think a lot of it has to do with the impending wedding. I think that really threw everybody for a loop.
Yeah.
The simple fact is you could go online, as you could see, this guy with this beautiful girl looking happy and smiling, and everything is being arranged for this wonderful marriage. And that's why I think it really threw people, not just so much that he was a medical student, but that he was going to get married and he had a girlfriend. Everything looked so happy and hunky-dory. It's hard to then fathom why he would be doing these creepy things right before his wedding.
We've all done it. We've all talked about it. We've talked about safety on the internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it just seems like there's always that potential out there. Let's talk about the internet and how it affected this case. Like you say, it's no different than, you know, the hookers that are out walking on the strip. But it's that whole, you know, you tell your kid, be careful who you're talking to out there. And I think that sure hits home with this one.
Well, right, except for in this fact, and in this particular case, and I know a lot of the media has been trying to downplay this, but the fact is the women who are offering their services on there are offering services for prostitution, and I don't care what label you put on it.
Yeah.
If you're going to come and do an exotic dance, or you're going to come and give a supposed erotic massage, or whatever you say you're going to do, when you're meeting that man alone in a hotel room, you are offering prostitution services, and that's all there is to it. So these are women who have been willing to take these kind of risks for the money it's going to bring in. And what's a little bit more dangerous for these ladies is the simple fact that in the past, when women have worked, well, working down the street has always been dangerous, but you're getting a little bit more upscale girls doing this right now, and they used to do it through escort services and massage parlors, and the escort service provided an address which they went to, and therefore the man knew that they were being identified. And the massage parlors, there was always a manager around and other girls around, and it was a location, again, where the guy knew people were watching him. So those were safer locations for women to ply their trade, but now what's happening is they want to cut out the middleman. They don't want to pay those fees.
Yeah.
You have to pay the escort service and the pimp and to your quote manager. And so consequently, they found this really great way to cut out the middleman and get money just directly, but it puts them in huge danger because they don't have any protection.
Criminal profiler Pat Brown is here. When you talk about a story like this and you talk about the media and the, you know, how they tried to talk about the victims, and it's tragic to see the victims the way that they are. I know I've had a massage once, and it was a big, great big guy who had more hair on his knuckles than I have on my whole body. Certainly wasn't
a man, huh?
Yeah, that's right, and he threw me around pretty good. And when that's out there with today's society, and you have all the missing people that we do, and we hear talk about human trafficking, and we hear talk about this case and that case, one thing that I think the media has missed a little bit on, Pat, here is the actual good police work that came about to get this guy, or am I wrong?
Well, I think this guy did make it kind of easy, I have to admit. I mean, he left a huge electronic trail, and I don't fault the police for doing good police work. They did do good police work, definitely. They did everything right that they should do, in spite of what the fiancé said, that, you know, they did the right thing. But he did, Markov, for some reason, you know, he may be smart as far as his studies goes, but he's kind of a real dumbhead, you know, comes down to crime. I mean, and he's not unlike a lot of, you know, criminals in their early phases. They're so arrogant. They've gotten away with so much in their earlier lives with family and relatives. They sort of excused all their behavior, and they've been able to manipulate everybody. So sometimes they get so arrogant by the time they commit crimes, they really just think they don't have to bother to, you know, be that careful. And, you know, when you're talking about crimes without the electronics, I think you're talking about much more difficult crimes to solve, because when you get a guy who just grabs a girl off the street, you really have no clue. You have no videotape of him. You have no, you know, you just don't know who did it. You have absolutely not a clue. But in this particular case, just the electronic trail was just ridiculously, huge. And so you wonder why Markov didn't consider the possibility that he was going to be filmed at the hotel, and why he wouldn't leave an electronic trail of his computer and his phone. But I guess he just pretty much probably thought that he could get away with it, and wasn't worried about it. It's just that's the kind of ego that he had. Not that he wanted to get caught, but I think he just thought he wasn't going to be.
You know, that narcissistic personality, and we hear about it now and then, and I might as well ask you the question in a broad sense. When you see some of these criminals and how easy they made it for them to get caught, you hear some people say they wanted to get caught. It was a cry out for help, blah, blah, blah. Is there anything to that?
No, there really isn't anything to it. I think that, you know, a psychopath does not want to get caught. He likes what he's doing. He likes the game he's playing. He likes being smarter than everybody, as he thinks he is, and getting away with it. And a good portion of them do get away with it. And usually, as I said, it's because it's a stranger crime, and they just simply have no clue who in the population it belongs to. And unless his DNA comes up in an offender bank, or he left a fingerprint, or did this electronic trail, you know, likely he's going to get away with it. So most of them think that's what's going to happen, and they said no, they have no desire to get caught. It's just they're stupid sometimes. You know, not everybody's a bright criminal.
Well, speaking of stupid, let's talk about Casey Anthony here a little bit. If I see a picture of her, I tell this to all my guests, peeing in the parking lot again on Nancy Grace's show, I'm going to throw up because I think it does nothing for the case. It just talks about Casey Anthony, and most people have made up their mind when it comes to that. But now we're seeing George and Cindy. We're seeing the deposition video. We're seeing other, I have never seen a case like this with so much so-called evidence, and I'll question the admissibility or the reliability of most of it, if it's even going to be used, being released to the public. What's your thoughts on George, Cindy, and the parking lot peer, Casey?
Well, I think, first of all, I would like to have seen a gag order on this case. This is just ridiculous.
Yep.
This is going to be the example case for all time to come, that this, we're not taking justice very seriously. If the prosecution, the defense are allowed to run around town blabbing things, the police just release every single piece of evidence, I think it gets to a point of ridiculousness. I don't have a problem with just releasing basic information that, you know, so-and-so has been arrested, and, you know, the basic details of the case, just simple things, and then that's it. The police department should put out a statement, and they should shut the heck up. And the defense attorney shouldn't be allowed to go on, you know, he's worried about the jury being, you know, you can't get a fair jury trial. Well, what are you doing, Baez, but opening your big mouth constantly? So, I mean, how can you complain about anybody else? I think it's just ridiculous. Now, the family, that's a different matter. They can say whatever they want, and, you know, sort of not involved in it, but we see this, you know, this Anthony's, I don't know, they're like a mafia family to me. That's exactly what they act like. It's like, look, you know, they were mad at Casey when they found out that, you know, Kaylee was missing. They were mad at her for stealing money. They wanted to call the police on it because, you know, you don't mess with us. We'll take care of you. But then when somebody else wants to mess with them, it's like, don't touch our family. So it's like a mafia family, and everybody lies, and everybody does whatever they have to do to protect the family.
You know,
and it's clear that Cindy and the entire family is just a pack of liars. That's all there is to it.
You know, I've spoken to both George and Cindy, and we've all sat back and speculated what they're really like. Did we see the real George and Cindy in the deposition? Cindy, the mafia boss, and George, the guy who.
I think we saw a lot of that there. You know, the way they think they should have more rights than anybody else, and they should have the right to have everything their way. And we see a lot of where Casey got her own personality from. I think it was a very, very disturbed family, and that apple did not fall far from that very poisonous tree, and that's why they've got the troubles that they've got. I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but, you know, a lot of times when we look at victims, families of victims, we say, wow, you know, this tragedy must have truly affected them. I'm like, no, a tragedy doesn't change your personality. It may bring out your personality, but it doesn't change it. So whatever people are before the tragedy, the murder, is what they are afterwards. So if they were sweet people before, they're sweet people after. And if they're nasty people before, they're nasty people after. And the tragedy is just part of their life. But it doesn't make them from one thing to another.
What do you think of the comment that a lot of people are making, that all they're doing now is they've lost their grandchild, they're just trying to protect their daughter?
That's what a lot of people say, you know, and you know, I'm sorry, maybe I'm just a cold-blooded person myself, or cold-hearted, shall we say, but I mean, if your child is a murdering killer, that child should not be in society anymore, and you should have the decency and ethics and morals that to stand up in society and say, you know, it's a tragic situation for us. I mean, we're horrified that our daughter turned out this way, but there is no way we can stand behind her, since she has killed our grandchild and she is a danger to society. And we're all heartbroken, but we have to stand behind the law, and we have to stand behind truth. And I have seen parents do this, so that's why I know that it can be done. And when I see parents stand behind their children no matter what, my guess is that's the problem with their kids. They've done that all along, and that's why they have a little psychopathic child to begin with.
Yeah, and you hear the comment from George, my daughter, my daughter, my daughter, and Cindy, the death stare, like she's going to jump off that stand and beat the crap out of you. It hasn't even gone to trial yet. What's this going to be like when it goes to trial? We're going to hear about this story for a long, long time. And the sad part about it is, Pat Brown, is that there are a lot of other stories out there that just aren't getting any coverage.
Well, that's always true. I mean, I just think that's the way it always has been. I don't know as much we can do about that. People like a circus. People like, you know, that's what they go see. They go see a circus. They don't go see some minor sideshow. So I think there's not much we can do about that unless we change our legal system and not allow the kind of publicity. There are certain places that do that. I believe Canada is pretty strict on those things.
Yeah.
And I know when I speak on any cases for Canadian TV, they're very, very specific about what I can and cannot say and how much they could talk about the case. And they really keep it really downplayed up there, and I have to kind of admire them for that.
Yeah, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. Pat Brown, criminal profiler, thank you, ma'am.
That's enjoyable. Thanks.
We'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
All right. All right.
That's Pat Brown, criminal profiler. You can see her on Nancy Grace once a week. Hear her on my show about once a month. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with another victim, probably the nicest guy you're ever going to get, Drew Kessie. And we're going to talk about the Florida Missing Children's Day Foundation, a very important cause, and a cause that we believe here in Scare Monkeys Radio. Anything that we can do to help find missing children or help educate people when it comes to missing children, we'll certainly do. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. You know, in the show earlier on tonight when I was talking to Mark Klass, I said to Mark Klass that one thing that I just can't get over and I admire so much about victims and victims' families is their strength to carry on and help others. Someone who is a family member of a victim, of course you all know that Jennifer Kessie is a victim of abduction and has been missing for some time now, is her dad, Drew. Drew Kessie is on the air with me. He's always welcome to be on this program. And we're here to talk about the Florida Missing Children's Day Foundation, something that Drew has become part of. And I'm not surprised, because Drew Kessie and a lot of other victims are always out there to help. Hi, Drew. Welcome back to the program.
Good evening, Dana. Thank you so much for the time.
Tell us about the Missing Children's Day Foundation and how you got involved.
Well, actually, I got involved a couple years ago by way of Jennifer being part of the ceremony. Since 1999, by state law, Florida is one of the few states that actually recognizes by law a day specific for missing children, missing persons. And on the second Monday of September every year, by law, there is a ceremony at the Capitol Courtyard, and the governor presides over the ceremony. And it's extremely touching. But we do honor those who do help the missing also, as well as recognize and remember those who still are.
I've seen parts of the ceremony, and touching is an understatement. I'll tell you, it makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up, and the emotions flow freely, even from an old crusty guy like myself, Drew. It's something, and I believe you're now chairman of this organization, that sadly we keep seeing more children missing, in not only just in Florida, but across the world. And I don't care if the child is 6 months old to 46 years old, a child is still a child. A family member is still a family member. And when they go missing, there can't be a bigger shock to the system, a bigger tragedy for a family. What do you tell the people? How does the foundation help?
Well, the foundation works in coordination and under the direction of Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and specifically the Missing and Endangered Persons Information Clearinghouse. So we have all the databases that are up and running. We're constantly hooking up with states that are getting on board as much as we do in Florida, as well as the national databases, the NAMIS .govs that are coming down the pike. That'll help us tremendously. So we do education for children. We do IDs, fingerprinting for children. And we also run the Silver Alert through the Missing Persons Information Clearinghouse also. So there's a lot of different things that it encompasses. But the foundation is specifically for the day. And to take on that responsibility of letting everyone still know that there is, at least in Florida, there's over 4,000 missing, and in our country, over 100,000 on average every day.
And those numbers are just unbelievable. But I want to get your thoughts on, and maybe you'll comment, maybe you won't, about how the media is treating Florida. A lot of these cases, the high-profile cases in particular, the Anthony case centralizes on Florida, focuses on Florida. Lunsford and other cases. Is the media being fair to Florida because it's a big country and there's a lot of people missing?
Yes, I think they are. I have to be honest with you there, because really it seems these things can happen in other states, but it seems that people tend to run to Florida, they tend to run to Texas, and they tend to run to California.
Yeah.
Oops. And Arizona is even starting to pick up. So it's really, I don't know, it's strange, but obviously they're going to places where they can meld in when they do this type heinous act, and I don't know, it's heinous.
Yeah. No, and I totally understand, and the purpose of my question is it seems like all we hear about, or maybe because it's been somewhat narrowcast in the media, is Florida. And you know, I have to agree with you is that the media has been fair. It's just that it happens to be where it's going on. And like you say, Texas and California are other states. I want to talk with you, Drew, about DNA a little bit and the data bank and what the government is doing, whether it's state, federal, local, international levels, how important DNA is, especially with a lot of the Jane and John Doe's that are found out there. Can I get your thoughts on DNA and are governments doing enough to make sure that there's a good, decent data bank out there?
Well, we're finally moving in the right direction. We do have NAMIS.gov, and anyone can go to that. And in fact, a great website is actually DNA.gov. Everything in the world you want to know about DNA is there. And DNA is the new fingerprint. It's the new photograph. It's the new technology that will take over investigations. And it's truly proving to actually save investigative funds over the long run so far because of the fast return. So, you know, anywhere we could push any DNA technology, we're going to have the central database at the national level so the states can tap in and give all their information and vice versa, and we'll get it all the way up to CODIS so we can really tap into the small percentage of the population that is creating these heinous crimes. But we'll be able to get to them faster and make more recoveries, as well as, on the flip side, let people go that are truly innocent.
Yeah.
It is two sides. People think, we're only going after the criminals. No, it's going to prove many people, and it has in Jennifer's case, to be innocent.
You know, and I want to share with the folks, the Florida Missing Children's Day Foundation website is www.fmcdf.org, www.fmcdf.org, and information on Drew's daughter Jennifer is www.findjenniferkesse, Kesse is spelled KESSE.com, findjenniferkesse.com. You know, Drew, every time that we have you on the show and you and I talk, I always say that hopefully someday we'll be able to talk about Jennifer coming home. Can you give us an update on Jennifer, and will there be some closure for your family someday?
We sure hope. You know, we still have strong hope. As just this past week was actually 3 years and 3 months that Jennifer has been away from us. However, there's still so much going on, and unfortunately has led to dead ends, but it's so hard to explain that even after this amount of time, how active Jennifer's case still is, how leads still do come in every week. And I believe we're going to have closure. I unfortunately don't think we're close to it right now, though.
I hate that term closure because it's never closed for your family, but it's certainly something where you'll be able to bring your daughter home
right.
And she be laid to rest properly, and we all hope and pray for that. Drew Kesse, it's always a pleasure having you on the program.
I thank you, Dana, so much.
We'll stay in touch. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Drew Kesse. And again, remember the Florida Missing Children's Day Foundation website, www.fmcdf.org. That's www.fmcdf.org. And, of course, more information about Jennifer Kesse and her disappearance could be found by going to www.findjenniferkesse. Kesse is spelled KESSE.com. That's Find Jennifer Kesse.com. Got about 3 or 4 minutes left in the show. We're running a little bit quick tonight. So I want to share a few thoughts with you, give you an opportunity to call in if you like. We don't normally take calls on the program here because we don't have a toll-free number, but I will accept them now and then when we're running a little bit short or long on time, whatever you want to say. We've got about 7 minutes left. So if you want to call in and talk about any case you like, it's area code 306-842-7884, 306-842-7884. Only call if you're listening to the show live. Quite often, when I do take calls, I'll get calls from people who are listening to the podcast of the program, and that's obviously not live. You know, tonight we wanted to focus on the missing, you know, the pedophiles, the predators that are out there. And again, it's just, it warms my heart to talk to people like Drew Kesse and Mark Klass and all the others that we've talked to on the program here, because they've gone through such heartache, such tragedy, such, you know, disappointment, a range of emotions from, you know, A to Z, and yet they come forward to help others. You know, they come forward to help others and do what they can to try and, you know, prevent something from like this that's happened to them to happen to someone else, or to help find someone that's missing. And, you know, say what you want about George and Cindy Anthony. I saw a clip of George Anthony the other day helping look for Haley Cummings. And I give anyone credit that goes out and actually helps in a search, that helps do something, doing their small part. You know, we can all sit back and talk about it. We can even criticize. We can speculate. We can do whatever. But until you've actually gone out and done your part, you don't really know what it's all about. And until you've been, you know, a family member of a victim, or, you know, a victim yourself of some sort of a crime, being a crime victim is something, because you'll soon gain faith or lose faith in the system. But we have to remember the system is the best system that we have right now. The media does its best when it comes to reporting. Sometimes they overdo it, in my opinion. Sometimes they don't. There are a lot of other stories that are out there that can be told, and we try to do that here on the radio show and, of course, on the blog at scaredmonkeys.com. The missing people that are out there, they're not all spectacular type of media horror type cases like the Drew Peterson case or even the Anthony case, where we keep hearing about it over and over and over and over and over again. Justice is served many different ways, many different times. And we can only hope that families like the Kesseys and others will be able to get justice served. Holloway, you name it. You know, look at the Lifetime movie here the other day. I've heard good things, I've heard bad things. Unfortunately, where I live, I didn't get to see the movie. But if you can keep a story alive, if you can keep it open, there's no statute of limitations when it comes to murder. Sometimes murders aren't solved for 15, 20, 30 years. We hope it doesn't go that long, but then we hope that families like those that are out there that are suffering, that want answers, will eventually get them. My name's Dana Pretzer. This has been Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll remind you that our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can pick up podcasts of past shows, listen to the daily commentary, leave comments, whatever, and we'll see you again real soon, in fact, next week, here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Thank you to all my guests, and thank you for being out there and listening, because without you, we wouldn't have much of a program. Thank you, good night, and we'll see you next time.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.